So I wanted to, this week, anyone saw the email, the title was The Connection Between Pais and Thanksgiving. And I'm sure everybody's wondering exactly what that means. Hopefully we'll talk about that. Thanksgiving is this week, and it's definitely on people's minds. Whether you celebrate it religiously or not, it's definitely on your mind. And I want to show the connection between this mitzvah we're going to discuss today and give us a sort of attitude towards the Thanksgiving. I want to discuss today three or four separate mitzvahs, which all interconnect. The first mitzvah is found in the book of Vayikra, chapter 19, verse 27. The first two mitzvahs are there, and then also verse 28 is the third mitzvah. The first mitzvah is stated in the Torah, Lo sakifu pas roshchem. You shall not, essentially means don't cut off the corners of your hair, this idea of payas. Velo sashchis is pas zekanecha. You shall not destroy the corners of your beard. And then the next verse, verse 28, has another prohibition. Ksoves ka'ka lo snubachem. You cannot have a tattoo upon yourself. Ani Hashem, I am Hashem. So there are three separate mitzvahs mentioned in the Torah, one after the other. One is not to cut off the sides of your hair. One is not to destroy the corners of your beard. And one is not to have a tattoo. Those are three different mitzvahs. So like we usually do, we'll go through some of the brief rules and halachas of the mitzvah, and then we'll discuss some of the meaning behind it. The idea of not cutting off the sides of your hair, there's a prohibition only on males, not on females, not to shave off the sides of their hair. And the way it's described is to have the back of your ear and your forehead all evened out. So it would be totally cutting off all the hair, basically on the sides of the head. The way you know what area of your head we're talking about is if you draw a line from your hairline, for those who've lost hair from your original hairline, all the way back to the tip of your ear. So anything under that line is considered your pais area. And that area cannot be totally cut off. You're allowed to obviously have a haircut there, but you have to leave enough hair. The way it's described is that the hair can be folded back to touch its root. Certainly, authorities point out that a half centimeter of hair is fine. It can be very short. If you're using like clippers, usually a size 2 guard will be fine. A size 1 is already getting iffy. But definitely a man should not shave off entirely the sides of his hair and make sure he leaves at least enough hair that you can kind of grab and twist over. That's the amount. The prohibition continues down from that line that we discussed into the end of the prohibition is actually a dispute if it ends at the bone right over here, like where your jaw kind of meets over here, or if it ends where the ear starts separating, or the bottom of the ear. Three different opinions. So those are the different areas where the prohibition might end. However, again, we're talking about shaving it down to nothing. If you leave a little bit there, that's fine. Definitely one can rely upon the lenient opinion of the highest area, which is just the bone right over here. Which is why you find many Jews that have at least short sideburns going to right here, because you can't shave it lower. That's the idea of payas. Now, the fact that you find many Jewish men with longer payas, or even longer payas, or longer payas, that is not in any way a requirement, halachically. That is something which people have taken on based on many different reasons, whether it be Kabbalistic reasons, that mystically there's something to it, whether it be to accentuate the fact that we have a mitzvah to leave this part of the hair longer, and they can't shave it off. But that's certainly not any requirement. Halachically, that's something which people have taken on for different reasons. And we'll discuss maybe more about that later. Especially Hasidim, as we know, Hasidic Jews, when they have very long payas, they never cut them their entire life, many of them. And that is all coming more from Kabbalistic roots and other types of ideas rather than strict halacha. Yeah. How do they make their curls? I don't know. They are impressive curls, though. A lot of them are very impressive curls. But I don't know how they do it. Yeah, I'm not sure. The second prohibition discussed is not to cut off the corners of your beard. And what that refers to is the Torah discusses this prohibition twice. In one place refers to it as destroying, and one place refers to it as shaving. So rabbis say the Torah means that the only thing prohibited is an action of shaving that also destroys the roots of the hair. So for instance, the rabbis say any sort of scissor action is okay, but to have a blade cut right against the face is a problem, because that blade is a shaving action which also will hit the roots of the hair. which is why nowadays with electric shavers, it's much easier for a Jewish man to shave because most electric shavers will have a scissor action. There are some which are discussed. They might go, you know, they pull up the hair and they're very deep. If you have any questions, speak to your own rabbi about what kind of shaver to use.
Do you know a kosher brand of electric
shaver? I don't know offhand.
But any of the lift and cut ones
are not. That's who you ask. Yeah. But that's the main thing to discuss with your own personal halachic authority. But the main idea is that a normal razor blade is cut so close that it's a destructive action of destroying the root of the hair, whereas a scissor action or this action of electric shaver is something which just cuts it, doesn't destroy it. That's the difference which is made. They also have, people don't use them so much nowadays, certain creams which will cause the hair to fall off the face. And that's okay to use halachically because that's not a shaving action. The only thing prohibited is a shaving action that is destructive. That's the way the Torah describes it. When it says the corners of your beard, it refers to five spots on the face. It's a major dispute what those five spots are. So technically, if we knew exactly where they were, you could kind of shave with a razor in between those spots. but since it's not clear where those are, so most Jewish men should avoid shaving their face at all with the razor. Certainly the back of the head is fine, some lenient with the neck, but anywhere on the normal beard area, with the razor, will probably fall into one of those categories and be problematic. So that is the idea of not shaving off the corners of your beard, which is why classically Jewish men have had beards throughout the ages, because especially for the age of electric shavers, it's very hard for Jewish men to fully shave, right? According to halacha. Nowadays, where we have methods that we can shave, which are do match up with the halacha, which are permitted, and you find Jewish men are clean shaven. The classic Jewish look throughout the centuries has been bearded, really, because of this mitzvah. That's where it came from. The third mitzvah I mentioned is not to have a tattoo. A Jewish man can't have a tattoo. Jewish man, female as well. That's for man or woman to have a tattoo. And that's pretty obvious. It means don't have a tattoo. That's what it means. It means etching into the skin and injecting ink. That's how the Torah describes it. A Jewish man who has a tattoo doesn't seem to have any reason he has to get rid of the tattoo. A Jewish person. This applies to men and women. A Jewish person with a tattoo has no reason to remove the tattoo necessarily. But you should not have a tattoo in the first place. There is this, I would call it a legend. Yeah. I said, if one has a tattoo, then there's no halachic requirement to remove the tattoo.
Because the person has already committed a sin, and even if they take it out, it's still committed.
Yeah, the sin is a sin. The issue is not having it, the issue is doing it. Once it's there, it's there. So the person might opt to remove a tattoo. A person who decides to become more observant might want to remove a tattoo, but there's no obligation to remove the tattoo. There is this kind of, I would call it, I don't know, legend or misunderstanding that a Jew with a tattoo can't be buried in a Jewish cemetery. I don't believe there's any halachic source for that, and just like any other Jew who has performed any sort of sin, he's certainly allowed to be buried in a Jewish cemetery. So there might be a burial society that might not want that person buried near them. But ultimately, halachic sources, there is no source to say that a Jewish person with a tattoo can't be buried in a Jewish cemetery. Not to my knowledge, not in my research have I seen such a thing. So those are the three mitzvahs I want to discuss. We'll get to the fourth one later on. But the idea of all these mitzvahs is, they all overlap. And the Sefer HaChinuch writes that all three of these things were idolatrous practices. The idolaters used to have tattoos. They used to shave their beards, used to shave their heads. And therefore, the Torah prohibits these actions in order so we avoid idolatrous practices by all means. That's the reason we find for many mitzvahs based on different authorities. Others point out, such as the Sephorno, a great Italian commentator, he points out that the human body is considered sacred. God gave us our bodies. They were created in the image of God. As the Torah says, Kid Musainu. So again, it's in our image, in our form. So our bodies should be viewed as something sacred and holy. For us to defile our bodies in any way is defiling of God's creation and something that was made in the image of God. The Talmud even goes to the extent to say it's a mitzvah to wash our bodies, because you're washing your body for the honor of God. Because if we walk around and we're created in the image of God, and we walk around in an unclean, unsanitary way, that itself reflects negatively upon God. So we actually have a mitzvah that we should wash our bodies. The Gemara says, "Kavod Kono," for the glory of our Master, of our Creator. The Gemara even gives us an analogy. It says it's like you have a statue of the king. So if you let the statue of the king become dirty and old and overgrown with moss and algae and mold and everything else, so it's a disgrace to the king. So if the human body is created in the image of God, and we let our bodies become unkempt and ugly, that itself is a disgrace to God. So that's one explanation given. It's a caring for our bodies, yeah.
But women pierce their ears. Always wondered, why is that considered?
Well, I guess it's a good question, but that's something which is considered beautifying the body rather than disgracing it. Why that is, I don't know, but you find that even the matriarchs pierce their ears. You know, you find Rivka got Nezamim, so I don't know where the line is drawn. It's a valid question. But you're certainly allowed to do things to your body which are considered. You can cut your hair and look nice, but the Torah considers shaving off the hair or tattooing your body, those types of things, in a way disgracing the body. The Sforno also points out that we're not supposed to have anything etched in our body besides our bris. We have a bris, which is our covenant between us and God, and to put a tattoo in the body is putting another sign etched in the human body, and in that way it's going to detract from the bris, which is in the human body. Based on that, maybe women should be allowed to have tattoos. I don't know, but women can't have tattoos either. But that's another reason given by the Sforno. The Rabbeinu Bechaya talks about the idea of shaving off the beard, and he says a very interesting point, which we actually mentioned a few weeks ago, which is that when God created the world, God wanted each species to remain unique. So one of the major differences you have between men and women is facial hair. Men have facial hair, women do not have facial hair. So God, when he made the prohibition of destroying the roots of the hair and shaving in a way which is destructive, God was telling us that you should not destroy the sign of the fact that you're a male. That sign. So he says it's very similar to the idea of kilayim, the forbidden mixtures we discussed a few weeks ago. Just like you shouldn't create new species of animals, and you shouldn't crossbreed fruits, you also should not destroy upon yourself the signs of your gender. Which also relates, I think, to the prohibition of men dressing as women or vice versa. It also prohibits men wearing women's clothing, women wearing men's clothing, and it comes down to the same point, is that God wants each species, we'll call it different species, you know, just to, I guess to be clear, to be distinct. And men should be distinct, women should be distinct, and the two shouldn't cross. And it's an attitude for us to have, that God made the world in unique ways. Every species is unique. Men are unique, women are unique. We should make sure that those distinctions remain clear. Another interesting point made by Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, but it's also found in earlier sources, is that you want to differentiate between the portions of the head. If you were to shave off the sides of your hair, as we have it now, you know, you have the front of your head, your forehead, which is no hair on it, and then you have the back of the head, which is covered in hair. If you shave this part of your head, now you're equating the front and back of your head. Now, why does that matter? So the Ralbag, one of the earlier commentators, he writes that in order for us to understand any form of wisdom, square one is to make categories and distinctions between different elements of any sort of thing. The step one of science is to look at something and define its elements, define what's it comprised of. So with the human head, the brain has its different functions in different areas. So there is, I'm not an expert on the human brain, but the front and the back of the brain have different functions. And Rav Hirsch points out, he's writing this back in the 1800s, and I'm sure by now science has discovered even more. Rav Hirsch points out that the division between the front and rear of the head coincides with the cerebrum and the cerebellum. Not that I know the difference between the two. Maybe someone else does. But you have the cerebrum and the cerebellum. And he says that the frontal part of the skull contains the cerebrum, and the back part contains the cerebellum. So there's two parts of the brain, and it's distinct. The front part, where you have no hair, is where your cerebrum is, and the back, where the hair covers, is where your cerebellum is. In Rav Hirsch's words, and again, I don't know what modern science has discovered, you know, even beyond this, but Rav Hirsch says that the cerebellum is the human element of the person, whereas the cerebrum is the animal element of the person. Is that right? I think that's right. If anyone understands more about the brain than I do, you're welcome to jump in. But the point being, again, this putting the science aside and something we can look into, the point being is that it's important for us to distinguish between the two elements of our brain. There's a part of our brain which functions like an animal would function, with instincts, animalistic drives, and I guess that the more creative, more productive or more intellectual human part of the brain, which functions differently. And those two parts of the brain can be distinguished by the front and back of the head. So the way that Torah describes, the way that the rabbis describe this prohibition is don't let the back of your ears and the front of your forehead become the same level. Make sure there's a distinction between the two. Leave hair there. So this part has hair, this part doesn't have hair. And that's to show us this distinction between the two parts of the brain. And it's to teach us a deeper lesson, which is that Rav Hirsch points out. Rav Hirsch says, I'll read you his exact wording. But the relation of the frontal part of the skull, containing the cerebrum, to the back part with the cerebellum, is that of the human element to the animal element in human beings. And so here again we meet the importance and weight which the teaching of the sanctifying of our lives lays on keeping vividly in our minds the existence of these two specifically different elements in man's nature, and of the higher dignity of the intellectual, moral, spiritual factor to which the animal factor has to subordinate itself and be kept in the background. It is in the former alone which man is to recognize his appearance as man. The hair down the temples is an admonition for a man to be a man. That's what he says. So for human beings, as man, he means a human being, obviously. But the idea of the hair here is to tell us that we are human beings and we cannot equate the different functions of our brain as all one. We have the animal part of ourselves, as we discussed many times before. We have the human part of ourselves. And we have to always distinguish between those two. And the Rabbah, who makes a more general point, he says that the first step of any discovery of any form of wisdom is to be able to categorize and understand there's different parts of anything. He doesn't go into the functions of the brain. But he says to understand that different parts of the human being have different functions, and we can't equate, obviously, our heart to our lungs, or our brain to our toes, or our nose to our ears. So we have to break down in our head. There's different parts of the head which function that way. And this is the ticket to wisdom. Because wisdom means the ability to categorize, to compartmentalize, to define, to break away and understand every element, every component of everything in the world. That's what wisdom is, essentially. So the fact that we maintain these distinctions in our body shows us that we have to recognize that the brain has different functions, and for us to grow in wisdom, we have to understand the function of each part of the brain. So that's another meaning of behind this mitzvah. Now there's another meaning which is described by different commentaries, Ibn Ezra, Rabag, others, and they say that relates to another mitzvah in the Torah. This is the fourth one we'll discuss today. In chapter 20 of the book of Vayikra, verse 23, the Torah says, you shall not go in the ways of the Gentiles, that I'm going to send away before you. Because they did all of these things, referring back to some immoral things mentioned here in the same chapter. And I despised them. I was reviled by them. They were disgusting to me. So this is a mitzvah we refer to as lo silcha b'chuko sagoi. You should not go in the ways of the Gentiles. Now that's a mitzvah which needs a lot of definition, because what does it mean to go in the ways of the Gentiles? I mean, Gentiles do a lot of things that we do, and we respect them for it, they respect us for it. So what does it mean not to go in the ways of the Gentiles? Just in terms of these mitzvahs, so many commentators point out the connection. The why should we not have tattoos, or why we should not cut our hair in certain ways, to avoid looking like the Gentiles. We should remain distinct, be proud of who we are, not try to just to blend in with their styles and their modes of dress and their modes of, you know, their tattoos and everything of the like. So many relate these mitzvahs of how to have your hair cut and how to shave and not having tattoos to the idea of not following with the Gentiles. But again, I want to focus more on this mitzvah, not following with the Gentiles, because it's a mitzvah which needs a lot of definition. There's a lot of discussion of in halakhic sources what it means. I mean, are we going to say, well, they eat pizza, so I can't eat pizza? I mean, I assume that non-Jews invented pizza, we didn't invent pizza, so why can't we eat pizza? Obviously, we don't mean that. We're allowed to eat pizza, you know? It doesn't mean, well, they wear pants, so I shouldn't wear pants. I mean, we can all wear pants. Maybe ladies shouldn't wear pants, possibly, but the idea of pants is something which, you know, Gentiles wear pants, we can wear pants too. So what's the idea of not following the ways of Gentiles? It doesn't make sense. The Ramar, Moshe Israelis, who is the Ashkenazic authority of Halacha in the Shulchan Aruch, he says that when it comes to dress, he says we're allowed to dress like them as long as it's not a breach of tznius and modesty, or as long as their clothing is not coming from idolatrous sources, as long as there's some reason for doing it. So for instance, if you know the fact that we wear a shirt, or we wear pants, we wear underwear, we wear a sweater, I mean, there's no idolatrous source for these things. It makes sense. There's no breach of modesty by wearing a sweater or a shirt, so these types of things we can go ahead and wear. We don't say, well, we're going like the goyim. But that's not something that we would say. He says, he gives an example. Even something which is kind of different, but has a good reason to it, and again, the reason does not come from an idolatrous source or from a breach of tznius, it's fine. Such as he says, doctors wearing clothing which is unique to doctors. He's writing this, I guess, in the 1600s or so, and he points out that the doctors would have a special mode of dress, so you could identify people as doctors. If there's an emergency, you know to call the guy over, right? So there was a good reason for that. So even though the dress may have been different than everyone else, maybe called it strange, I don't know what they wore, but since there was a good reason for it, and didn't stem from any idolatrous practice, and it wasn't immodest, so that's not considered going the ways of the goys. If a Jewish doctor wore doctor's clothing, it's no problem. Like, wearing scrubs nowadays. You know, if a Jew's put on scrubs, you don't say, well, this is Gentile clothing. You say, well, there's a reason for doctors wearing scrubs, and therefore I can wear scrubs. So where does it apply, though? So things that have no good reason, and things which stem from idolatrous sources or immodest sources, those are issues. It could apply beyond clothing. It could apply to activities. It could apply to hairstyles. Some explain this only if you're trying to do it with the intent to imitate the non-Jews. Maybe, for instance, let's say I like a certain hairstyle. So if I'm doing it because I like the hairstyle, then that shouldn't be an issue. If I'm doing it to blend in with the non-Jewish society around because I want to look like them, I want to look different, so that could be an issue now. Because now I'm cutting my hair in a certain way. There's no benefit to that hairstyle. I'm doing it just to blend in with non-Jews, so that could be an issue halachically. Because I'm trying to be like going the ways of the non-Jews. However, I have a reason for it. I want to have short hair because it's hot outside. Or this is a style that I like very much, I think is very flattering on me. Then that shouldn't be an issue. But it could really depend upon the intent of the person. Now this is such an important mitzvah. I mean, practically, there are some ramifications. But I think it's an attitude. It's a big attitude that Jew has to have. I mean, let's go back, 70, 80 years of American history. When all the Jews are immigrating from Eastern Europe. So how many of those Jews assimilated into American culture are never to be found again? And if they didn't, what about their children or grandchildren? It's something that the Jewish came over from America, and they wanted to blend into the American melting pot, and it took on the ways of the non-Jews so they could blend in, so they could become like non-Jews. And what happened to those Jews? Unfortunately, many of them are no longer identifiable as Jews anymore because they became so melted into the melting pot that they weren't Jewish anymore. You couldn't see, they didn't act Jewish, they didn't feel Jewish, they didn't look Jewish. They lost their identity. So the attitude, for specific questions, should I do this, should I do that, should I do the other thing, that's not what I'm here to address. You can ask your rabbi about what's an appropriate practice or not. You can think about it yourself. But this attitude which is here, which is that we have to be proud to identify as Jews. The fact that we may have to look a little different, act a little different, dress a little different, it's nothing we should be ashamed of. It's not something we should feel, I don't want to blend. I want to blend in. I don't want to look different. We should say, well, I'm proud. I'm one of God's chosen people. God gave me a special mission in life. God gave me a special Torah. And the fact that maybe I need to look a little bit different, that's not a big deal. It's a badge of pride and a badge of courage. It's not a badge of shame. They say that somebody asked, there was a famous rabbi, Rabbi Ephraim Oshri. I believe he lived in the Warsaw Ghetto. Come to the ghetto? And he's somebody who was a rabbi. He was asked a lot of practical halacha questions during the Holocaust. And I believe he survived. Is that right? He survived? I think he survived afterwards as well. He put together books of responses about questions he was asked during and after the Holocaust. So one of the questions posed to him was, somebody said, they had a tattoo from one of the death camps, and they're a survivor. Should I remove the tattoo? And he said, I'd like you to wear it now as a badge of courage. Don't remove it. Leave it on. Let it be your badge of courage. So then that's obviously an extreme example of identifying as a Jew, being proud of it. But on the other hand, in our own ways, all of us have ways in which we can identify as Jews. And even though it might feel strange or look different, but that's who I am. That's what I'm here for. It's my mission in life. And therefore, this is the attitude I should have. So this attitude is something which we have to be able to balance with interacting with the culture around us. I mean, we should interact with the culture around us. Society around us is a very nice society, very welcoming society. Many of us have non-Jewish friends, non-Jewish neighbors, non-Jewish co-workers. We should respect the government. We should be at peace with all of our neighbors. We should be polite and friendly. We should not be antisocial or isolationist type people. We should be very much within the society around. However, we have to recognize that first and foremost we're Jews. We have to identify that way. And we don't do things just because it's the in thing or because that's what society around me does. We do things because we feel it's the right thing to do. We should not have a desire to be like the non-Jews around us just because they're non-Jews. We should have a desire to do the right things. If they're doing the right things, then great, we can join them. But if the things that they're doing don't seem to have any reason, don't seem to be moral or correct or right or ethical, then we have to take a step back and say, I'm a Jew and I'm different. And it's a struggle that we all have sometimes living in such a welcoming society. Now, apparently this is a much easier attitude to have back in anti-Semitic Eastern Europe 100 years ago, because who wants to be like the drunk anti-Semite trying to kill you every day next to you? You know, no one wants to be like him. But when you're in America and your neighbors are very nice, good, friendly people, so, and your coworkers are very good, nice, friendly people, then why shouldn't I want to be like them? And it's a nice culture around. We always have to take the step back and have the attitude that we're unique and special. And whatever step we take, whether it be in activities, in dress, in speech, whatever we do, we have to start and think, why am I doing this? Am I doing this because I feel it's the right thing, it's good for me? Am I doing this because I want to just blend in and not stick out? And that's always a question every Jew should ask. In next week's parsha, so Yaakov is coming back to greet Esav. Esav wanted to kill him. Yaakov spent years away working at his uncle Laban's house. He got married, he had kids, on his way back to meet his brother Esav. And he's very scared. And he prays to Hashem to save himself from Esav. And the prayer which he says is, Hasilini nam yad achi, save me from my brother, save me from the hands of Esav. So commentaries point out, why does he say, save me from my brother, from Esav? God knows who Esav is. God knows who his brother is. Why does he have to save both my brother and Esav? So many point out, primarily the Beis Halevi, points out that Yaakov had a dual prayer there. He was saying, Esav is somebody who hates me. Often he comes at me in a very violent way, wanting to show me his hatred and kill me. That's when we call him Esav. Save me from Esav. But sometimes Esav comes as a brother. And deep down he still hates me, and he wants to do me in, and he wants to do the worst things for me, but he puts on a facade of being friendly. Yaakov's first prayer was to save me from my brother, because that is the most insinuous and dangerous type of evil. Somebody who appears to be friendly and good and wants the best for you, but deep down is here to destroy you. That's the worst type of person. So the Beis Halevi points out that society around us at times may come against us as an Esav, and is very clear about their hatred and disrespect for Jews. But some of the society seems very friendly, but in a very, very subtle way, it's also destructive. You know, we can't always be fooled by kind and welcoming societies around us. And again, I don't want to speak about America. America is a great place to live, but we have to just always be on alert. There may be something which seems to be a very, very friendly practice. It might be something which is very dangerous for our spiritual health. That's very possible. All those Jews that were lost to assimilation in the past, you know, 8-9 decades in America, it's not because America came at them in a violent manner. It's the other way. America was so kind and so welcoming, they just got lost in America. That's what happened to them. Similarly, when Esav finally meets Yaakov, so the verse in the Torah says Esav went and he kissed Yaakov. So the rabbis say, well, if you look in the Sefer Torah, there's actually dots over that word. And the rabbis say that Esav wanted to kill Yaakov, he wanted to bite him. But God made a miracle, and Yaakov's neck turned to stone. He couldn't bite him, so he kissed him instead. So it's an interesting description that the rabbis give. But the Sfas Emek explains, the way he words it, is that at first Esav wanted to bite him with his teeth. When he couldn't do that, he decided to bite him with a kiss. Because you can be bit with a kiss also. Sometimes a kiss can be more damaging than a bite. Because when you think Esav is your friend, he's going to damage you much worse than when you know Esav is your enemy. So that's just a warning that whenever we see anything around us as friendly as it looks, we have to just be careful. Sometimes it's, you know, Esav, sometimes the society around us is actually friendly and doing good things for us. But we can't just take in everything hook, line, and sinker and think that it's, you know, everything around me is perfect. We always have to think. We have to put our brains on alert. Why am I doing this? Why am I buying this? Why am I cutting my hair in this way? Why am I going to this place? Why am I speaking in this manner? Why am I watching that? So the answer sometimes is because I think it's the right thing to do. That's great. And even though my non-Jewish neighbors do it too, that's fine because, you know, we can do the same things. But if the answer is because I want to fit in, I want to be American, even though this may not be a Jewish value which I'm about to participate in, So that's that. So that already is coming back to this mitzvah. We should be very careful about going in the ways of the goyim. Now there are some Jews who take this to an extreme. Some chassidim. The chassidim, like we pointed out, they have their long payas, and their dress is extremely different than the typical dress you find Americans have. And most of them will still speak Yiddish as their primary language, because they've taken this to extreme and say, we don't want to at all interact with society. We feel that we need to remain separate. And therefore, we're going to maintain a manner of dress, a manner of speech, and we're not going to at all consider society around us. That's their approach. And they have their reasons for it. That's not the approach of non-Hasidim. But we have to at least have the attitude that, you know, we might dress and look like those around us, but we have to always understand why we're doing it. And the main thing is always to be thinking, not just to be going with the flow, but thinking, why am I participating in such an event? Why am I wearing this type of style? Why am I getting this type of haircut? The answer has to be because it's the right thing for me, not because it's the in thing, and I want to blend in. So this is where I'm going to get to my connection between Pesach and Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is a time which it's a very welcoming part of American society. It's a very happy day. It's a very joyous day to get together with family and friends. The halachic ramification of Thanksgiving is discussed based on this mitzvah, not to go in the ways of the Gentiles. Now, there's actually a major dispute amongst the halachic authorities. Is it proper for a Jew to participate in Thanksgiving feasts or not? I'm not here to tell you yes or no, and whatever you do, you can do. But the thought process is based on this concept, that am I just trying to be an American without thinking about my Jewish identity? Or am I doing something which I feel is the right thing to do within my Jewish identity? So anything that we do just to kind of, I want to be an American, I want to be as American as apple pie, and therefore I'm doing it. But you're not thinking at all about, well, is this proper for my Jewish identity? So that's already approaching on this mitzvah of this prohibition of not going the ways of the Gentiles. Now, the Torah does preach that you should have gratitude towards your government. We should pray for the welfare of your non-Jewish government. It's important to do things referred to as Shalom Malchus, for the peace of the kingdom, and Darkei Shalom, for the peace of others around, and there's nothing wrong getting together with family and enjoying a day together. These things are fine. But if the thought process is, I'm doing it because I want to be American, and I'm disregarding anything, and I'm not thinking about what would the Torah say about this celebration, so to me, that's already something we should have to think about. We have to think more thoroughly about why am I participating in such a thing. Now again, in terms of the actual halacha, you have opinions ranging from should be fine, you're allowed to do it, or it's forbidden to be done. You know, it goes all in all three ways. And again, that's between you and your own rabbis, know what you should do. But my point is the attitude. Whether you celebrate or not, the idea is the framework. Is my reason to celebrate because it's a day off work and it's a nice day to get together with family? Is my reason to celebrate because I enjoy turkey? Is my reason to celebrate because I think it's a way if I can show my gratitude towards the kind American government that takes care of us and gives us freedoms and gives us a great place to live? Or is it because, well, my non-Jewish coworkers also have Thanksgiving, so how can I not? And we have to just make sure we put it in the right framework to show that we're special as Jews. But we do it because it's the right thing, because Hashem wants out of us, and not because I just want to blend in with society. You know, Hanukkah is approaching. We have Hanukkah in a few weeks. And the battle of Hanukkah was against assimilation. That was the battle of Hanukkah. And I always point out that Hanukkah comes during this time of year, I think, for a reason. It's no coincidence that this time of year, when the non-Jews have their holiday seasons, and all around you are being bombarded by non-Jewish holiday displays, starting from Thanksgiving all the way through New Year's, all around. Before Thanksgiving. Yeah, okay. this is the season, Halloween also. This is the season we're being bombarded by non-Jewish holidays. And Hanukkah was the struggle against Jews who were referred to as Misyavne, Jews who took on Greek ways. The term we use for the Hellenistic Jews is they're called Misyavnim, those Jews who became Greek. You know, we don't have a term like that when it comes to other societies that we lived in. We don't have a term called Misbablin, Jews who decided to be Babylonians, or Jews who decided to be Romans, Jews who decided to be Persians. But there's a term which is used throughout halakhic literature and the Talmud, Misyavnim, because the challenge of Hanukkah was that the Greek society was very appealing to us. And everyone wanted to be part of Greek culture. And many Jews became Hellenized Jews and became Greek Jews. And they looked Greek, and they acted Greek, and they ate Greek. Everything about them was Greek. So what's the lesson of Hanukkah? It's that you don't become a Greek because everyone around you is Greek. Is there anything wrong with taking on Greek ideas? Not necessarily. You know, the Torah says that The son of Noah, who Greece came from, was Yefes. The Torah says the Yefes could be within tents of shame. Within the Jewish tents, you can have Greece. That's what the rabbis teach us. However, we have to make sure that we bring Greece into our tents, and we don't become Greeks. And that was the challenge of Hanukkah. And the fight of the Hanukkah, the fight of the Maccabees, we fight against assimilation. And it's a struggle which comes up this time of year, I think, most powerfully in modern days, because this is the time where the culture around you is bombarding you with non-Jewish ideas, and you have to be able to sift through, well, what's appropriate for me to participate in, what's not, what is an appropriate practice, what's an appropriate idea, what's not appropriate. Should I feel the holiday season and get into the holiday spirit based on the culture around me, or should I not? You know, that's and sometimes you want to get involved in the holiday spirit because it's everywhere, you know, and it pulls you in. But Hanukkah is right in the middle of this period to show us that this is the time we have to think most powerfully about not assimilating into the culture around us and remaining unique as Jews. The Sefer HaChinuch writes, the end of this mitzvah, I'm not going in the ways of Gentiles, the Sefer HaChinuch writes that if we distance ourselves from their ways and we focus our hearts and our minds on God and His precious mitzvahs, nafsho b'tuv talin, your soul will dwell in goodness forever, v'zaro yirash aretz, and your children will inherit the land. So Sefer HaChinuch writes that the blessings that come to a Jew who remains distinct are very great blessings, and it's a struggle that every Jew has had throughout history, in some generations more than others. I think our generation has this struggle in one of the more difficult ways that other generations have had. But the attitude overall has to be that I am unique as a Jew, I'm proud of being a Jew, I'm distinct as a Jew, and I'm going to do the things that are right because I'm a Jew. If it happens to coincide with society around me, that's great. But if it doesn't, it's also okay, because I'm proud of who I am, and I'm proud of being Jewish. So just to recap, we discussed today four separate mitzvahs in the Torah. One was not to cut off the sides of your hair. One is not to destroy the corners of your beard. One is not to have tattoos. And the fourth one was not to go in the ways of the Gentiles. Now, these all relate in the fact that the rabbis teach us that these hairstyles and tattoos were Gentile ways. That's how they all relate. The idea of not cutting off the hair we discussed was the idea of respecting our bodies, discussed the idea of distinguishing between the front and half of the brain, and we discussed the idea of not trying to appear or imitate the ways of the non-Jews. This goes also for the shaving of the beard, it also goes for the shaving of the beard, the tattoos, and shaving of the hair. All three of those things are to keep us looking respectful as Jews, respecting our bodies, and not following the ways of the non-Jews. Have any questions?
Wow. You pulled it together.
Thank you. Well, like I said, so some rabbis will tell you that you should celebrate Thanksgiving. It's a mitzvah, you know? They say that Rabbi Soloveitchik used to end his class early on Thanksgiving and go home and have his Thanksgiving meal. That's what I've heard. I don't know the source, but that's what I've heard.
Rabbi Moshe has a tshuva saying that he feels very grateful to the American government for the kindness they've done to him, and therefore this is an appropriate way to
Right. Actually, Rabbi Moshe, I think, has a few conflicting tshuvas, but that's one of them there, right. So, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, he definitely says Thanksgiving, you're allowed to celebrate. He said you shouldn't make it like it's a holiday you have to have every year and you can never miss it. You know, you should treat it like you treat a Jewish holiday, you know. But you're not going to miss Pesach. So he says you can't make it like a Pesach and you can't miss Thanksgiving. You have to have your turkey, you know. But to have a turkey and celebrate, Rabbi Moshe says it's certainly allowed, you know, not a problem. Rabbi Yitzchak Huttner said that one should not celebrate. He felt you're giving too much into society around you. You're acting too much like a non-Jew. He said that one should avoid it. Again, there's different opinions out there. Again, ranging from the fact that every Jew should, and it's, you know, it's recommended, to it's fine, but if you want to, it's okay to do, or to it's prohibited, and don't go near the turkey. You know, those are three different opinions. So everyone should do as they see fit, or as their rabbi sees fit. But to me, it's all about the attitude. You know, we have to put everything in the proper framework, that we don't just do things based on the fact that society around us has done them. We do them because they're right for us. That's how we do it.
That's an excuse. I don't mean that.
Yeah, you know, everyone's off work. It's nice to get together. So that's, you know, it's only a way to get your family together. That's nice, you know.
You don't have to put everything on black. You can just, like, eat it like a normal person.
Yeah, right. You know, right.